Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton and Katie Galley with you here this afternoon. I almost said Stone Payton, Lee Cantor.
I know, it's just a reflex.
I know. But no, Lee's on walkabout. You and I have been running the shop for the whole week.
Yep.
I think the quality's gone up considerably.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's been a lot of fun. We have really met some very interesting people over the last few days.
Yep.
And had some marvelous conversations. This is going to be no exception. This is going to be a fantastic segment. We got one guy brought his paparazzi with him. He's got like this whole entourage. Then we have a seasoned veteran who is no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone. A little bit later on, in fact, in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Stephen Loudermilk, mm-hmm. and get caught up on what he's doing.
Yeah.
But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, President and CEO with Eagle Business Credit, Mr. Ian Varley. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you.
We are delighted to have you. It sounds like maybe you come a little from a little bit east of Sandy Springs.
No, I just put on the special filter. That's why it sounds
good. I can't change my accent, unfortunately. I've got it stuck here. Yes.
Oh, please do not change it. I find it charming. I suspect most people do. Eagle Business Credit, mission, purpose, what are you out there trying to do for folks?
That's right. Yeah, Eagle Business Credit, we help small businesses grow. We provide finance for growing companies, and it's a particular sort of finance called factoring, which is accounts receivable funding. So a lot of companies that may not qualify for bank finance will come to us when they've been turned away from lots of other places, and we find a way to help them.
Well, of course, I am completely facile in all of these topics, but Katie doesn't know what factoring is. So right. For Katie's benefit, no, I really don't. So tell us what factoring is. Sure. What is it?
Yeah, so it's basically business funding. If you're a company selling to another business and you're issuing an invoice for your goods or services that you've delivered or performed, then we can help you get money quicker than waiting for your customers to pay you. So it's not like a bank loan. It's more of a revolving type credit, and it's on your receivables. So again, a lot of companies struggle to help their cash flow because their customers aren't paying them. And factoring bridges that gap between when they issue the invoice and when the customer pays. And it's as simple as that. And it's very different to a loan. The repayment comes from your customers. So for example, Stone, if I sold something to you for $10,000 and I gave you 60 days to pay, I'd have to wait for you to pay me for that $10,000, right?
You're right.
We would come in and we'd say, hey, no problem. Stone can take his 60 days to pay. Eagle Business Credit will give you money against that invoice now within 24 hours. So it literally takes the place of that payment coming in.
24 hours versus day 59.
Correct. And that's if you pay on time, right? You know, a lot of people don't.
And how did you find that there was this need? I mean, you just developed this need or you saw it in the market and so you created this?
I wish I was, I'd be a rich man if I'd created it. No, it's been around for a long time. A lot of people say it actually goes back to Roman times, which, you know, I can't really talk to whether that's true or not. But it's definitely, you can trace it back to the new country, basically, America, where you had traders based in Holland and the UK dealing with their agents over here. So they would basically issue this type of funding for those people. So that said, in modern days, it's really been around in large numbers since the 60s. And it's come about, certainly in the UK, that's the largest factoring market. Italy's a very large one as well. China's big. Here in the States, it is big. It's centered around a number of sectors like apparel, transportation. Certain of those sectors have heard of factoring. So if you talk to a trucker, he knows exactly what it is. But if you talk to just your average company out there, they probably haven't heard of it. But it has been around for a very, very long time.
So then is there a particular type of business that would most benefit from factoring?
Yeah. And again, it comes down to those sectors. If we talk a little bit more about truckers, we handle a lot of trucking companies. Typically, it's an owner operator. And, you know, they're all down to earth, sort of the earth type people that are out delivering goods. And they don't want the hassle of waiting to get paid. They don't even want the hassle of having to do their bookkeeping. So what we do is they give us their paperwork showing that they've delivered the load. And again, instead of having to issue an invoice and get paid by the broker that they're working with, we'll do all of that for them. and we'll give them the money for that load right up front, and then we'll collect it from their broker later on. So it's really, really good for a trucker because he can use, or he or she can use that money to fuel up their truck ready for the next load, and they're not having to carry the burden of that cash flow tied up in their receivables.
But this challenge, though, and the same set of solutions, equally applicable up and down the supply chain, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Any company selling to another business that gives credit. So they issue an invoice and it's right. on terms. And a lot of people give 30 days, and that's fine and that's normal. But even 30 days when you're doing, you know, several hundred thousand a month is a lot of money waiting to come back into the business.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's bridging that gap. Staffing companies is another one. You know, you've got to pay your temps on a weekly basis, but maybe you can only invoice your customer on a monthly basis. So that's an ideal scenario where that cash flow gap exists. And again, we can bridge it. You don't have to worry about waiting for 30 days to get paid. You issue your invoice, you get your money tomorrow.
Interesting you should mention that. Just had lunch with one of our largest clients. They're in a highly specialized little niche of the temporary staffing for highly people with a great deal of expertise in a specific domain in the training and instructional design world.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I think he basically is carrying his people that are out there doing the work. So he is the type of that business is the type of the business that ought to be at least exploring.
Exactly. Give me his name. I'll get in touch.
We get you hooked up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Staffing companies, trucking companies, lots of different sectors it works for. But again, it's any company selling to another company. So it doesn't work for, you know, a coffee shop or a dress shop or anything that's retail, because mm-hmm. the customers are individuals, okay, and they're typically paying at point of sale.
Right.
It's going to work for a company selling to other companies, and it really doesn't matter what they do as long as they have an invoice on credit terms and they're typically waiting to get paid. If it's cash on delivery, there's no credit gap. They get their money right away. So
right.
any sector it works for. And literally, there are millions of companies that do this around the world.
Wow. So how does one get to be the grand poobah of something like Eagle Business Credit? What is the backstory on this for you personally?
Started Eagle 5 years ago. We celebrate our fifth anniversary this year. Been in factoring for 30-odd years, unbelievably. Originally from the UK, like I said, was with a large multinational factoring company.
Okay, so you knew this business, you knew
yep.
this world, you
mm-hmm.
were with a company.
Yep.
I did not share with our listeners, part of the entourage that I mentioned is the spouse. I'm not going to put her on the air because she didn't want to be on the air. But I got to know, I'm trying to picture you coming home one day, honey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start my own business. Is that how it unfold?
We both worked at the same company, so she kind of knew some of the frustrations I had there.
She was cool with this.
Yeah, she was.
Jump off. Okay.
She was working there too. So we've worked together for many years, and
right.
you know it's great. We love it. But the company I was with was again very good company. Was lucky to be there for 15 years. They enabled me to come to the States. But it had grown very large, become like a lot of large organizations, very political. It was very hard to get stuff done. And again, imagine we're helping small businesses and they need to have answers and they need it quickly. Well, a lot of the things that had gone on in that company slowed down our ability to make decisions and really help those companies. So if I had a frustration there, it was that we couldn't react quickly. So, you know, this went on for a few years. I said a lot of things I could do there, but for a couple of years, I'd been thinking, okay, this is frustrating. And, you know, I used to be able to get stuff done, but now I can't. So I was lucky to meet some investors at an industry show and we got talking and the rest is history. They basically put the money up, enabled me to create the entity that is Eagle and do it how I want to do it.
Okay. This sounds like a Hallmark movie. You decide you want to go into business. You go get you some investors. They give you the money. You're rocking and rolling. I mean, come
That's
on.
It.
Is it just because you travel in those circles and you know how money works?
I guess that helps.
That you got know? People to
yeah.
to invest in you?
Of course. Yeah, it helps. And again, you know, I've been doing it a long time, so they can look at what I've done
right.
and say, yeah, he looks like a safe pair of hands. He should be able to not lose our money. And
he's married to Chris. So
yeah.
we've got like a safety net.
Well, she only joined Eagle about a year or so ago. She took some convincing to come across. But in the end, it was like, look, we're going places. We're growing nicely. So it's probably safe for you to jump on over now. But she had stayed with the old company for a while, and I think she'd also found the same frustrations. And, you know, again, it happens. You know, companies get big and all these layers come in, and what used to be a fun environment had turned into this large political thing that, like I said before, we found that the biggest frustration was we weren't able to deliver what we wanted to deliver to our clients because of ourselves and the structures that we had. So we've blown all that away at Eagle. And I'm fortunate that I've got a very seasoned team with me as well. They've had a few people follow me, some new people join, some experienced, some not. And we do our own style, if you like, of what we know best. And the main thing is that we look at the client and what do they need. And even if we can't help them, okay, it's going to be a quick no. We're not going to drag this out like some places do. If I can be on the phone with a prospect, they could be calling up asking about what we do, and I'll talk to them about their business. It's what I enjoy the most, is finding out how they, you know, what struggles they have and how we can help. And if it's clearly not a fit, so say it's a retail company, well, that's an immediate no. We're going to say no, but we're going to say, here's what you need to do, and give them three or four things to try. So, you know, for me, it's not about all the structure. It's about how do we really help those companies grow.
So why are you now settled? Why did you choose Atlanta to come settle in?
It's the grits.
It's the grits.
I was actually, when we left the UK, went to California and set up an office for the old company there. And they asked me about 10 years ago to move to Atlanta. I said no three times. I was in California, so why do I want to leave? But actually, in all seriousness, it's the best thing we did, because over here, you know, if someone says, let's do lunch, they mean it. Whereas in California, I was finding there was a lot of people who were saying it, and I was really confused because I was from the UK saying, but you said we were going to do lunch. Anyway, so the people are a lot more genuine. You can get around Atlanta. You can really do several meetings and get stuff done. Whereas in California, I was spending most of my life stuck on the freeway of 405 in traffic. Again, the weather's beautiful over there. The people here are more genuine. Business happens a lot better here, a lot quicker, and people, as I say, really mean what they say. So, and from a personal point of view, I was able to halve my mortgage and put my kids through college without student loans, because the cost of living is completely sensible.
Yeah. And so then do you think there's a direct correlation between just the community that you found here, the people that you're actually able to interact with and build relationships with, and the growth of your business?
I do believe that, yes. Again, a lot of companies that we have that we fund are in the Southeast. We do have companies nationwide. They find us from all over. But we are certainly concentrated here in the Southeast and very happy to be. Certainly in and around Atlanta and around Georgia and down into Florida, we have a lot of businesses. And yeah, I think there's something to do with the culture in and around Atlanta that, you know, stuff happens and people care about it as well.
All right. Walk us through it. I know, hypothetically. Relatively successful, small still, but growing business media network. And we have clients who sometimes it's kind of a big hit for us, but it might be 60, 90 days. What does that look like? You sit down with us, our leadership team. You're looking at 2/3 of them right now with me and Katie. The other one's in South Florida right now. What are we typically asking? What are we scared of? What are we concerned of? Walk us through what it would look like to bring on and have that relationship.
A typical client will find us again from a variety of different places. So we're out talking to as many people as we can, whether it's bankers, credit unions, brokers that we do business with, or online. And so they find us. The first question, if they're not from a sector where they've heard of factoring, obviously we're talking about what it is and how we can help.
So first you got to educate.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a simple sale. We're not selling widgets. We are selling money, yes, right, but people don't know what it is and how it works typically. So it's a consultative sell. And during the process, we're finding out about what they want and where they're trying to take their business so that we can make sure that what we're going to provide is going to be a good solution for them. The process itself is very simple, and it's not drawn out. We have done deals as fast as 24 hours, literally from talking to them to putting the money in their bank. Now, that's unusual. A usual time frame is probably a week, but even that's fast. You talk to a bank, try and put a line of credit in place. It's not going to take a week. It's going to take probably months.
Now, is it an all or nothing thing? Like if we came to you and is it you're going to be our factoring and we're going to do this for all of our receivables? Or is it the kind of thing where we say, look, we got a couple of big clients, and when we get that big hit, we'd like to go ahead and use some of that cash because we want to open Charlotte and Orlando?
That's a great question.
It took me a minute to get it out, but I thought it was a fantastic question.
You're right on point. No, You don't have to factor everything. So we do ask you to, when you've chosen one of your accounts, one of your customers that you want us to fund you with, then we do want to see all the invoices. So all the sales that you have for that customer, you should put through us. But otherwise, it gets confusing because obviously the customer needs to know who to pay, etc. But otherwise, no, you can pick and choose which ones you want to fund. We'll obviously approve them. So we're looking at the credit of your account debtors. And that's really the basis of how we approve you. So a lot of people come to us and they're concerned. Maybe they've got poor personal credit, that type of thing, or you know their balance sheet is weak. None of that really matters.
It's their credit. It's
exactly. We're not worried about the client or the seller. We're more worried about who they sell to, so their customer. And that's really where we're drilling down and underwriting the account and providing the finance. So yeah, they will come to us. Usually a mistake sometimes people make is, look, I've got these accounts and they don't pay me very quick. Can I factor them? Well, you can. But let's look at your complete AR aging and let's see which customers you have that are paying well. It's better actually for you to factor the ones that pay quick because it's cheaper. Our fee is based on the average time it takes for the invoice or the invoice is outstanding, how long it takes for your customer to pay. So if you factor the slow accounts, they're going to be more expensive. Uh-huh. We don't mind. If the credit's good, we'll factor whichever ones you want.
Right.
But again, we'll talk to everybody about it and try and come up with a plan that answers their need. The other thing that we do that's pretty flexible, again, is you know you've got a particular need. So you come to us with need point A, right? Whether it's you've got a bump in the road, your sales are down, or you've got IRS arrears, that type of thing. Our funding should be able to cure that need today and help you get to the future. Point B will be you don't need us anymore, or you graduate to a bank facility. And that's a great success story when we come across those, and they do happen.
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm good. You got it.
So what's next for you? Where are you going to be putting your energy? Are you trying to grow your enterprise?
Yes.
Deeper
absolutely.
And wider? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're 5 years old. Again, happy with the growth we've had so far. Always looking for more. And we're trying to be as innovative and flexible as we can, looking at different solutions. So being responsive to the marketplace, looking at what our competitors are doing. Nowadays, it's about how quickly can you deliver and what technology can you bring to play. So the online space is something that we're looking very close at to make sure that our service is as reactive as we need it to be and answer those needs. It's definitely about growth for us. We're just getting going. I mean, having fun on a daily basis, enjoying it. I wish I'd done it 15 years ago, not 5 years ago, because it's really... For me, it was, you know, it's liberating in some ways. You know, we're not about red tape. We're not about politics. We're about growing a business the same way that our clients are.
All right. So that, there's this technical aspect of what you do, and you have to educate, and then you consult. And then, oh, by the way, you got to run a company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've got to recruit and select and develop and train and look for cultural fit. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because that is more than a full-time job to try to juggle all that, yeah?
Wearing many hats, you know, like that Staples advert that was running not so long ago. You know, yeah, I do answer the phone and do all sorts. And again, that's what I love doing. And, you know, I'm a business owner the same as our clients are, so I can relate to the challenges that they have. On the way over here, my wife was driving because I was trying to fix an issue that was going on in the office right there and then. So, you know, it happens. I'm in touch with what's going on. And we're not a big team. We're 11 people, so it's not massive. And I have, again, good structures, good qualified people doing what they need to do. So I don't have to answer every phone call that comes in. But it's about staying in touch with what we're doing as a business and challenging what we're doing to be the best all the time.
So bringing new people on, and I guess I'm speaking to some of my own scar tissue, but I mean, I'm a small business guy. Have you cracked the code for this? And
I wish.
Do you have a process that helps? Because I don't know, my tendency, one of my challenges, I think, is I don't think I incorporate enough rigor and structure in the interviewing process and the early going.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, because I'm the same guy that threw his hat over the fence and said, hey, you got a cool thing going here, Lee, let's make it a whole network. You know, that's how I've been hiring too. And I know that's not
right.
Right. So yeah. Any counsel you have?
Any tips on that? I mean, obviously we really face two choices because we're in a specific industry. So do we go for somebody who is experienced? And there are a number of recruiters that we do use and have used that will look to our competitors to see who's maybe ready to move and come on over to a fun place to work for once. But then we also go outside of that and we'll just look for general, maybe financial background, maybe just office experience for different roles. So I like to have a mixture. I don't want everybody to be from the industry because it then becomes pretty stale and everybody goes, whoa, we don't never used to do it like this at so-and-so's place. You
know, he's heard that before, though. You heard that tone, right? This is so there's some scar tissue on that side of the table.
There definitely is, yeah. I mean, there's no magic formula, but what I can tell you is that you know, we want people to have fun and we want them to enjoy what they're doing because at the end of the day, you know, we sell money. It's not the most exciting thing for anybody to want to do. You know, we're not out there you know, doing crazy stuff like some of these places that I've seen, but it should be fun. So you've got to get what we do. You've really got to get in the spirit of helping companies and you've got to be a people person. So if you can do that and hopefully be relatively numerate at the same time, add up numbers, then you've probably got a place for us. We can train you. So again, we've got a lot of young people that are learning. I like to actually promote from within. You know, if you can grow your own, then that's a great way to go. And we've got some really, really good people. We've got a young lady that I can think of right now. I won't embarrass her by giving her name, but she joined us as a temp. She was just graduating college. She then had a baby. She then moved house. She then got married. She's been through a lot of stuff in literally 3 years that would age me no end. But she understands what we do, and she happens to be extremely good with customers. We were lucky. If I could clone her, I would. And we'd have an office full of them because she's awesome. Now, you don't come across them very often and didn't necessarily expect her to be as good as that. She came from a temp agency. She had some good office experience. That's where we got her from. And then I have some other people, like I say, who just have they're industry veterans and they help provide the deep layer of experience that we need as well.
So are there businesses that are too small? And I know we talked about the type of transactions that they have, like at the coffee shop, but it's not because the coffee shop is small. It could be a small business that's maybe doing, but like a consulting firm is what comes to mind because that's my background. I mean, sometimes that's a big ticket, ticket thing. So a small company could really benefit from this.
Small company absolutely could benefit from it. And again, we literally go from startup, you know, as a starting point. Mm-hmm. So we have some clients that, maybe give us $10,000 invoice a month and that's about it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine. We don't mind. We have a product that's specifically designed for $50,000 or less. It's an express funding product so we can get you set up. Everything's online so you can sign your documents online. Again, those are the ones that we can turn around super fast.
Right.
And again, it comes down to what do they do? What's the invoice for? And that's the key point. The size doesn't really matter. What we hope is that our funding helps you grow. And that's what we're looking for.
And that you can't, you meant you were kind of a little bit self-deprecating, you know, it's not a sexy industry or however you said it, but it is when you recognize you can help a small media network expand, you can help a consulting practice grow, you can help deliver medicine where it's, so you really are having that kind of impact and without you, they may not get that accomplished and certainly not on the same timeline.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And sometimes it is the difference between making it or not making it. And certainly we see it on the trucking side. You know, they will literally be at the truck stop waiting for us to put the money on their fuel card before they can gas up.
Are they really? They can be that hand to mouth.
They can be that.
Because they're independent. A lot of these folks are independent operators.
You're absolutely right. And it's a family thing. You know, they sometimes have the wife and the dog in the cab and that's it. That's all they do. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And we have to be able to relate to that. And that's what I actually really enjoy. And it's the success stories that we see that really do give us, you know, a sense of reward, if you like. You know, we'll talk to them about what's going on and we hope that the challenges that they have will be solved through our funding. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. Most of the time they are. You know, as long as the company really understands what they're trying to do, then the funding part is the only gap that they have, then the rest comes together. You know, we sometimes see businesses where maybe the rot set in and there's nothing any amount of money is going to do to turn it around. And we'll help them and we'll guide them and we'll at least be able to get them some relief there. But there's other issues that need fixing. But yeah, the fun part is when you see it turn around. And we have a lot of clients that have been with us now, you know, some that have been with us the whole time, the whole 5 years. And we love it because we've seen them go places and grow their business.
Katie, are you going to factor me? I know I owe you a lot of money.
Yeah. You can count on it.
So before we wrap, let's say that an organization just wants to get better at managing the receivables. And now they've got you on their radar and there may be a time to utilize your services. But are there some things that we as small business owners can do that just – do a little better. Maybe we didn't pay that much attention in the accounting class. And,
we see that a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
And often it's down to the fact that the small business, you know, they want to sell. And they don't want to be the bad cop where you got to phone them up and get the check.
Yeah, no, the selling's the fun part, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So again, they want to grow. They want to get more repeat sales, but they're less keen to remind that customer that actually they're overdue. Obviously, one of the first points is, yeah, you've got to be tough with them sometimes. And it's your receivable is only good when it's paid. So, yeah.
How's that for some wisdom? Good old homespun wisdom. That's true, though, right?
It is absolutely true. And, you know, one of the things we will do is help them with that. You know, small businesses need to look at the credit of their accounts as well. You can run D&B reports. You can get Experian reports. You can do trade references as well. You shouldn't be afraid to ask people for that information, especially if they're asking you to give them either extended terms or a large amount of credit, you know, if the sales are going to get big, because essentially you're funding their business for them if you don't. So, you know, that's
you're
one
factoring
thing.
For them for free.
Precisely.
Right, if you
precisely.
Don't do this. Right.
So that's one of the things. The best tip I guess I have is understand who cuts the check. You know, it may not be your contact that's placing the order. If it's Doris in accounts, whoever it is, be that person's best friend. Don't be afraid to call them. You have to get to the top of the pile. Sometimes it's about competing for the money, obviously, if there's a cash flow issue with that account. So you want to be their best friend. And you want to understand if she cuts checks on a Tuesday at 3 o'clock or when it is, so that you've got all your paperwork in order and that check's going out. It's not about, you know, being a pain for them. It's about having a relationship. You know you've got it when the accounts payable person phones you to tell you the check's on its way. And when you get that kind of relationship, you shouldn't have any issues.
The last 45 seconds of this conversation probably had more practical business value than most MBA curricula out there. I mean, how that makes so much sense. It's so doable, and it keeps all the relationships intact. Just have a good, solid working relationship with Doris.
Exactly. Yeah.
Seriously.
Make sure Doris has got what she needs. Make her life easier. You know, she's got a pretty horrible job cutting checks and having people screaming at her for money. So why not be her best friend?
And she puts you at the top of the pile, or at least throw you in the hat of the ones that are going to get paid this month if they're in trouble.
She should. But you know what? Right. If she doesn't, for whatever reason, then also don't be afraid to stop supplying them. You know, you have to be tough. And if Doris can't pay you because there is an issue, then you shouldn't be selling to them anymore. You really got to have that relationship.
Very helpful. I can see in your eyes. We can hear it in your voice. You really do find the work rewarding. And I mean, you clearly are one of those fortunate people, and I count myself among them, but you're doing what you ought to be doing.
You're absolutely right. You got to love what you do. Life's too short.
Yeah. All right. I want to make sure that our listeners know where they can reach out, have a conversation with you or someone on your team to learn more about this. Mm-hmm. So what are the best coordinates? Telephone, email, whatever's appropriate.
Yeah. Any which way, it doesn't matter. The main phone number for Eagle is 678-905-1321 or eaglebusinesscredit.com.
Fantastic. Well, it has really been a lot of fun and very informative for me personally.
Likewise.
To have you on the show this afternoon.
Enjoyed
man.
It.
Yeah, me too. Beats the heck out of working, doesn't it? Talking about this real stuff.
It really does.
Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit with one more guest.
Thank you.
All right, baby. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have with us no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone. How and why he's come back, I don't know. We'll find out. Please join me in welcoming to the show with Loudy Properties team, a part of, a division of, associated with, in league with Keller Williams, North Atlanta, Mr. Stephen Loudermilk. Good afternoon, sir.
Good to see you, Stone.
We are delighted to have you. What'd you learn in that last segment? Did you learn as much as I did?
Oh, my gosh. Ian educated me big time about factoring and, you know, business credit. I mean, I definitely want to team up with him more in the future, potentially, maybe a partnership.
Fantastic. So, Loudy Properties team, you out there, residential real estate? So, what are you guys doing?
Yes, sir. So basically, about a year and a half ago, Stone, I got into the real estate business at Keller Williams, North Atlanta, which is one of the leading Southeast real estate agencies here in Atlanta in the Southeast. We are, I'm focused specifically on residential real estate. I also do a lot of land real estate as well in and around the metro Atlanta area. That includes, you know, your area, Sandy Springs, Dunwoody, Brookhaven, Vinings, all the way up to, you know, the mountains. I know you're a mountain man, so. You know.
Well, I go to the mountains to play. So, well, what we call mountains here, all my friends in Colorado and West, they laugh at me when I call them the mountains. But we go to the highlands and that kind of stuff. Why Keller Williams?
Well, I'm all about branding. I have a big history in public relations and marketing, and Keller Williams has, you know, fantastic technology training and education program. I wanted to be part of a big brand with lots of different agents that I could work with and learn from in the industry. We have more than 350 agents in my office alone, about 5 or 6 agents on my team. So, you know, constantly educating myself about the industry and learning new things about the real estate landscape. It can be a simple industry, but it's complicated too, because you got a lot of law and regulations that you have to abide by and, you know, make sure that your broker keeps you kind of in line. So I wanted to be with the leading real estate brand in the country.
So when and why did you get involved in real estate in the first place?
Yeah, Katie, that's a great question. It's always been my dream to be part of the real estate landscape. I love houses. Who doesn't like making money? The Atlanta landscape in terms of, you know, the quality of living, like Ian mentioned before, you know, home prices, are pretty affordable in our area right now, especially for $350,000 or less homes. Where I used to live in New Jersey about 12 years ago.
I used to live in New Jersey too.
Wow. Small world.
Yeah.
You know, taxes were pretty high. And, you know, the same house that I bought personally down in Atlanta probably would have been about $600,000, $750,000 in New Jersey with taxes thrown on top of that, about $12,000 in property taxes.
Man.
And our earlier guest said the same thing, right? That was part of the attraction. Mm-hmm. We moved here and cut, wow.
Yeah.
Man, you guys.
There was my family moved down here from New Jersey, there was a leaving state tax too. Like you just had to pay.
You had to pay ridiculous. Tax to leave?
Yeah. And that was the thing is when my parents moved down here, because my brother, sister and I all came to college down here. So my parents had no more ties in New Jersey. So they moved down here with us. It was just so much cheaper to buy a house of the same size down here than it was living in New Jersey. My dad was just blown away. So yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, the housing market's, you know, white hot in Atlanta right now. And across the country, there's noticeable trends where, you know, home prices continue to rise. Interest rates continue to be pretty low. And, you know, people want to buy new homes. I'm selling a lot of new homes right now, especially first time starter family type of homes and, you know, mid-sized homes, you know, where people want to enhance their quality of life. Like Ian said before, you know, the business culture here, the quality of living, the corporations that are moving to Atlanta, you know, really attracts homeowners, and they want to be in, you know, single family houses, even, you know, really nice condominiums and townhouses in and around the perimeter right here, actually.
So you're finding that, I mean, having a real estate business in Atlanta, it's pretty lucrative. Like a lot of people are moving down here, people relocating and...
Yeah, I think the relocation industry is pretty strong here in Atlanta. Yeah. You know, like I said before, with a lot of the big businesses moving to Atlanta, there's a lot of relocation opportunities out there for agents like myself.
Yeah.
There's opportunities for a lot of the millennials, Gen X's, Gen Z's that are just graduating college, you know, to find, you know, their very first homes. And I'm helping a lot of them out, a lot of those students out right now, you know, find them, you know, attached townhouses and condominiums. Mm-hmm. And.
Okay. I don't get it. Here's the part I don't get. I understand it's lucrative business, lots of opportunity. You said you got like 350 in your location. Isn't it a very crowded arena? How do you build a successful real estate business, or does it take a long time, or you just have to know, how in the world do you get something like this up and going and make it into a lucrative concern?
Yeah, Stone, it's a very competitive industry. There's tons of agents here in Atlanta. But I think what I offer and bring to the table are the following things. You know, I'm more than just a sales guy. And to be perfectly honest, that's a brand new skill and technique for me. I'm more of a marketing communications guy. So when I put a house on the market, it's more than just signage and putting a lockbox on the property. It's getting out there with your network and building a storyline or
a brand. Well, I didn't even think about that because that's how we first met you, because you have that background in the PR marketing communication. So that served you, is serving you well, that knowledge. That's
it's good. Serving me really well. So like I'm working on blogs right now and, you know, writing my own Loudy Properties team newsletter that goes out to my network on a monthly basis.
He'll be in here promoting a book this time next year, probably, right?
I'm going to work on that.
So that has been a differentiator for you. That's how you've been able to kind of find your niche. Because I mean, if there were three other people that do what we do as niche as we do it, I mean, I don't know that I could compete with them. I'm like the only game in town.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I love you guys, but I know you're not the only game in town. I think technology is also separating the pack. You know, at Keller Williams, we're very focused on technology and being smarter agents.
Okay.
Yeah. Using big data and analytics, predictive analytics to look at where people are moving to or potentially when they're going to be buying new homes. So what I've come up with is, you know, I'm part of a growing population of agents that are smart agents using technology to our benefit. It doesn't replace relationships, you know, the face-to-face meetings, you know, the listing presentations with potential customers or clients. It doesn't take the place of, you know, getting to know that person, but technology is a huge benefit.
Right, we're seeing this happen in a lot of different sectors, right? You're seeing it with cars. You're seeing it with other big purchases. I don't know if we really are more educated, but if I'm getting ready, I am. I'm getting ready to buy a truck because it's hunting season around the corner, and I'm still in the Dodge Caravan that I hold cheerleaders around. Well, they're all grown and out, and you know, now I get to have my little truck, you know, to run down to the camp and hunt. But I'm going to poke around. I'm not going to go straight to a car lot. I'm going to poke around on the internet, right? I'm going to go to all these places I've been seeing advertised. That's happening in the home world too, right? So you're dealing with people that have, or at least have been doing something before they come to you, yeah?
Yeah, and I think 80% of people that buy houses are on the internet before they actually select an agent.
Wow.
And you also have a new population of what we call internet realtors like Knock and OfferPad, you know, that are offering different ways to.
And they're just pure internet.
Yeah, basically to sell houses.
Huh.
But my philosophy on that or my take on that is, you know, those companies aren't going to take the place of face-to-face meeting and building that network with the client. That's really where, you know, a buyer, a seller, a potential investor, and relies on you to help them find their next dream house. There's a certain amount of there's a lot of trust and accountability that goes along with the real estate industry.
So even with, like you're saying, a lot of your clients are now becoming millennials or bigger companies that are moving down here. So with the move towards everything being online, you still feel that, like, even with the millennial generation or Gen Z? Yeah. Gen Z.
There's a lot of letters now, right?
All the letters. that they would still want that face-to-face interaction versus just doing everything online.
Yeah, I think like with millennials and Gen Zs, Katie, they're doing a lot of Google searches on who you are before they actually interact with you.
Yeah.
But eventually they want to have a phone call or some sort of face-to-face meeting, maybe in a coffee shop. Like, for example, when I meet with a millennial for the first time and they're buying their first house for the first time, usually I'll meet at a Starbucks or their preferred location and do a buyer consultation with them. And that really assures them that they're going to get a great house because I'm going to do all the research up front with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make sure, you know, whether it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, whether it has a fenced in property for their dogs, that I'm doing my job in terms of finding them, you know, the precise property.
Okay. Got it.
So a real estate agent in your capacity, approaching it the way you choose to approach it, have you built out like this team of trusted practitioners that are related to your work? You know, like the person who can get the roof looking good and the pool looking good and I don't even know who the right people are. The estate attorney, it's a closing. Is that part of your approach as well?
Absolutely. Partnerships are a very critical stone to my business. For example, you know, lawyers on the contract to close side and closing documents, the loan side, I have a partnership of probably 10 different loan officers that I trust in my network.
I didn't think about that. That makes perfect sense. You want to have good relationships with loan officers. You want to be able to serve the person better, but also you guys want to be able to connect with each other and refer.
Absolutely. You know, as a real estate agent, what I say to people is I'm an orchestrator of many, many different components that could go on in a real estate transaction, from the legal side to potential problems with the roof. So I have a network of roofing contractors, kitchen redesign specialists, landscapers, people that I trust that I give to clients. That helps them, get through the home buying, home selling process much faster.
Well, I guess I was thinking about it from the home selling process. So I'm getting my place ready to go. And so if I come to you, you're like almost like the quarterback, right? Because we may need to get the roof spruced up a little bit, we may need to do some of the things to get these things to get it ready. And I don't, maybe if I'm working with you, I have more direct connection with these folks or...
Absolutely. And I'd love to talk to you about selling your house after this interview.
Different story for a different time. I actually have a brand new 30-year-old house. My wife accidentally burned my house down. Actually, it wasn't her fault. I think more and more, the more we think about it, I think it was my fault. So we're not selling, but we will be in a few years. But I tell you what I like the fact that my financial advisor is a little bit of a quarterback for me for other things I want to learn about, like long-term care insurance or insuring the home and so I guess I'm seeing the same sort of, like, you have this mafia. I shouldn't use the word mafia. You guys are from Jersey. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you, but you know what I mean? Like this close-knit group of people that you know and you trust, that I would find that very attractive as a client, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question, Stone. What I tell people is I'm a trusted advisor in your network. So when you're getting your house ready to sell, actually come over and do a walkthrough of the house, take a look through it. If they have any like defects, roofing defects, we'll get those fixed as soon as possible. Property needs to be staged, which is a really hot area of growth in the real estate
industry. Can that really help, or just depends on the situation? But I've heard this before, and it was a brand new concept to me, 8 months ago.
Home staging is one of the hottest trends in real estate right now. For vacant houses, there's actually stagers that will do virtual staging for vacant houses, which is pretty cool, via computer-generated technology.
How cool is that?
And then, for houses, that have possessions, they'll actually come in and move around your couch and your sofa and a few other things to make it look really presentable and give it more curbside appeal as you walk in the door.
And you got to get not too emotional about that and let them do what they do. They know how to sell a house. That deer head's got to come down. I mean, whatever. Right. I love it.
So is your Loudy Properties, is that underneath Keller Williams? Is it separate from Keller Williams? How is that? I mean, how does it work?
Yeah, so the distinction there, Katie, is there's a lot of teams and then individual contributors at Keller Williams, and I decided early on that I wanted to branch off and kind of create my own team. So I have, a transaction coordinator, I have people like my wife that help me out in marketing deliverables. I have people that help out in social media. I have my own network of photographers. And then everybody in my office, like brokers, they keep me honest. So that's the Loudy Properties team approach. And, as I grow my business, especially to like 30 transactions a year, I'm probably going to hire a buyer specialist, another listing agent, and really just create that formation of a team.
Well, you just said photographer, didn't dawn on me. That's a really important piece of this equation, because you could take a pretty house. If I take a picture of it, it's not going to look that great. I mean, that's important.
Well, pictures are worth 1,000 words. Mm-hmm. If you have a listing and you have really bad pictures, a lot of buyers' agents won't look at that house. So it's absolutely paramount to get really good pictures, not just on the inside of the house, but the outside of the house and the neighborhood amenities like the pool and the clubhouse. Different things that makes the house distinctive.
All right. So what do I do before I call you? Like, we think we're going to get, you know, we say, you know what? Next spring, honey, we're going to put this thing on the market. Do I wait till next spring, or I call you around Christmas and say, hey, Stephen, you know, how early is too early, or what's good timing?
Well, I definitely call me around Christmas time, because spring might be too late. It's typically.
Because that's like a hot season around here, right?
Spring is a very hot, no pun intended,
might miss the
season.
Window, right.
For real estate here in Atlanta. So it's always good to talk to a real estate agent, you know, at least 3 to 6 months before you put your house on the market.
And what do you want to know? Or can we cover that when you'll come out and visit with us or something? We'll get on the phone, or do we need to have some information before we even reach out?
Well, if you and your wife are interested in selling, you know, at the Christmas holiday, I could come out to your house and do a listing presentation, do a walkthrough, give you some advice about some things you might want to change about your staging, you know, your roof, a few other things. And then, you know, provide you some statistics on the market, including a comparative market analysis of similar homes in the area. And then we could go from there in terms of if you want to either interview other agents or
So we could learn
hire
a lot
me even, the next day.
Right. We could learn a lot in a brief exchange. And if you come the night of the 25th, you'll hear Holly tell Polar Express. And if I say so myself, she does a marvelous job. So, but reach out in plenty of time and then start that education process. And then you start telling us kind of the things we need to be thinking.
Yeah. And education, Stone, is very paramount to real estate. There's so many people that think they know everything about real estate and they put their,
yeah, I have a house. I know all about it.
Yeah. Like they put their house on the market by themselves. It's a very, very hard proposition, and it's hard to do that. Only 8% of the houses on the market are sold via FSBO. So you really need a good agent to interact with and handle that transaction so you can handle other aspects of your life. Without worrying about the house.
I'd starve to death if I was in real estate. Because just the paperwork and all that. I mean, but you've got it set up. You've got your team. You got everybody set up to do that. Were your inventory? We're in good shape on inventory. What's the inventory right now? There's plenty to buy. It's a buyer's market. So I may not even be using the right words, but yeah, what's kind of the state of the industry right now?
It's still a seller's market here in Atlanta. We have about 2.5 months of inventory. Of houses, and even less, you know, the single family detached houses, and even less inventory, about 1.5 to 2 months for, you know, attached townhouses and condominiums. For single family houses under 350,000, they're only on the market for between 20 and 30 days.
Wow.
And as less as, 11 days on the market for attached townhouses and condominiums. So, I mean, you're literally getting contracts on houses and condominiums in and around like your area, the perimeter where you're located, in a matter of days.
Wow. Well, I can tell you, in our neighborhood, and I'm in East Cobb, two or three homes in our little subdivision, and it's a little bit older, like my home's 30 years old, but two or three of them have sold recently, all in kind of one little spurt. And they all went for a great deal more than I would have thought that they would go for. And I know they did some home improvement stuff like that. And I kind of had mixed emotions because I'm like, okay, wow, that's going to be great for us. But then we got hit with the tax thing too. So obviously it is this seller's market right now. They went fast.
Seller's market. My prediction is it's going to continue to be a seller's market over the next year and a half. But there's going to be some a plateauing effect where it's going to flatten out a little bit. So buyers will have more opportunities to buy better houses in the long term at lower prices. So it'll be a buyer's market, I think, in about a year or two as well.
But you and your team, you guys can help on either side of the equation. Yep.
Either side.
All the way through the process. All right. What is the best way for our listeners to reach out and have a conversation with you or somebody on your team?
They can reach out to me directly via my cell phone, which is 678-333-4377, or they can go to my website, which is slaughtermilk.kw.com.
All right. And they can reach out and just have a conversation. They don't necessarily have to be, you know, they're going to sell tomorrow. Maybe they just want to start getting that precious education. Maybe they want to align to, you know, a good, trustworthy roofer. Right. I
mean, absolutely. Whatever they need, they need me for.
Yeah. Start having that conversation. You
know, becoming a trusted advisor and helping them out in the real estate process.
All right. Well, thanks for coming and visiting with us, man.
Thanks, Stone.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Katie Galley, our guest this afternoon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.